This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 27th of July, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And as ever, we're broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio in the centre of Sheffield. The programme is going out on FM radio and through our internet live stream. And however you're listening, we're also available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. Talking podcast. Did you catch last week's show? It was a corker. We looked at business acumen for artists and we discussed responsible business and business making a difference. Tom Vickers of Stoneface Creative and businessman and mentor Steve Eyre of World of Superheroes were here in the studio, along with Kate Rawlings, former journalist, now CSR manager at Irwin Mitchell, and Carolyn McConnell, business connector. That was then. This is now. If you missed the programme, it's up as a podcast on the Sheffield Live website, and have a listen. But who's on today? Well, I'm delighted to welcome to the studio Ashley Martin, Michael Hudson and Felix Barr of the Sheffield Vulcans Rugby Club. We'll be hearing all about the club in just a few minutes. Also coming up on the show today, Jay Bayani is back and she's going to give us our frequent update on what's going on in employment law and how it will affect you, your business, your social enterprise. So make sure you listen to that. And on the show as well, Tom Sutton of the Sheffield Chamber. He's got an exciting range of events coming up to tell you all about. So another packed programme, and that's just the way we like them. But what's been going on with you? What's been going on with your business, with your social enterprise? Get in touch. Let me know. I've been reading some really interesting research this week. Some research has revealed that nearly 6 out of 10 UK companies have paid up to £100,000 in extra incentives for EU workers, including pay rises, extra bonuses and more, to try and retain skills and labour from the EU, which they heavily, heavily rely on. And the latest ONS figures, Office for National Statistics figures, showed that net long-term migration to the UK from the EU was the lowest level last year since 2013. And one in five small businesses now rely on skills and labour from the EU. And organisations have long been restricted, of course, from hiring outside the EU too. So many HR directors who took part in that research, which was conducted by Migrate UK, they say that they're struggling to find sufficient skills, and they've struggled to find sufficient skills since the referendum. This is really, really quite worrying. What else? Well, Aston University in Birmingham, they've been using data from the new Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, sponsored by NatWest Bank, and they found that people from ethnic minority and immigrant backgrounds are twice as likely as British counterparts to be early stage entrepreneurs, according to research. So the proportion of people from ethnic minorities and migrants starting their own firms has risen sharply, at the same time as more modest increases among lifelong residents, according to the research from Aston University. So they say that there's also a new measure around motivations for starting businesses, revealing big differences between ages, between genders, ethnicities, socioeconomic groups and more. For instance, 2/3 of women say they started a business to contribute to society. And there's a big gap between people at different ages who talk about contributing to society and to making a profit as well. So people under the age of 30 are more likely to be strongly motivated by creating meaning as well as making money. And people with lower educational qualifications or less educational qualifications, so they're more motivated to make money. And the research is posit, of course, that that is to catch up with a position that other people are in. So GEM is the largest and the most comprehensive study on entrepreneurship in the world. It collects data on entrepreneurial activity from 54 countries. And the report, the GEM UK report, is out now if you want to take a look at it. So those are a couple of things that I noticed this week. What about you? What's been going on in your business, your social enterprise? What's been announced? What have you heard? The government sneaked out a whole load of research and reports on Monday and Tuesday before Parliament was dissolved. Traditionally, the days to bury bad news. Has anything been announced that affects you positively, negatively? What do you think? Get in touch. Send an email to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Send me a text, 07904 272 200. Whether you're running or starting a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, an employee, a worker, we're always keen to hear from you. So it's time to turn to our first guests in our very warm studio today. And Ashley Martin, Mike Hudson and Felix Barr of Sheffield Vulcans Rugby Club, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you very much for coming in. So first of all, Sheffield Vulcans Inclusive Rugby Club, what is the club?
So around the UK there's around 15 rugby clubs that are specifically set up to be inclusive. We're all part of the International Gay Rugby Organisation. We've been going since around since the end of August last year.
Yep.
So we're coming up to our first birthday now. And we're just looking to get more people in the Sheffield, Rotherham, Doncaster area involved in rugby, because for a lot of people, specifically LGBTQ people, sport is something that they maybe sometimes avoid or shy away from because of a kind of laddish culture or that kind of like fear of like persecution, whereas inclusive rugby is a space that is completely safe for anyone to play rugby, whether they are gay, straight, bisexual, whether they are old or young, large or small, or whether they've never picked up a rugby ball before. Then we want people to get more involved in rugby and start to enjoy it as a sport.
Right, brilliant. That's a great, succinct description. Thanks very much, Mike. Superb. So you've been going around your first anniversary, setting up here in Sheffield. So did you have support from IGR, from International Gay Rugby, or do you have to comply with certain ways in which clubs need to be set up, or do you set up the club and then go to them and get registered? How does that work?
So after the 2012 Olympics in London, there was a big pot of money left over, and it was kind of split up and given to different sports and said, this is to get more people involved in your sport. And the money and some of the rugby that went to rugby was called the Spirit of Rugby 2012, and it was to get more people involved, specifically young people. And a gentleman called Dean B, who actually is part of the Manchester Spartans gay rugby team, he worked across the north of the UK to help set up a number of new IGR teams. So we set up in August, Chester around a month afterwards, and then there's also been Lancashire Typhoons in the past year as well. So over the last year to 18 months, there's been a good number of clubs set up, and it was kind of last year at Pride, IGR, led by Dean, had a bit of a stand there to try and float the idea about a gay rugby team in Sheffield, and they had a really good response. A lot of people put their name down. And so a few weeks later, they set up the first training session. We all rocked up, not really knowing what to expect, because some people, like I said, never picked up a ball before. Mm. Some people had played but kind of stopped a few years ago. So like, I used to play in school, but then it was just kind of over. And then other people had consistently played it throughout university or throughout their life.
Right.
So after that first session, we kept meeting up, kept working with our coach, Andrea, and then eventually set up the committee to actually help it run as a bit more of a structured social enterprise.
Right, great. And is it constituted as a social enterprise then, or as a sports club? Or
I think club society.
Yes, club society. Yeah, great. So, fantastic. And it sounds as though it highly inclusive in terms of experience and ability as well. So whether you've never picked up a rugby ball but you love the idea, or you've played rugby in the past or continue playing rugby all your life, this is a club for you.
Definitely. I mean, some of our top scorers and some of our man of the matches from our games this season have been people who had never picked up a ball before until they joined in September.
Yes.
And that's really fantastic, seeing someone go from a complete novice at the start of the season to developing their skills and really starting to enjoy rugby as well. And we've seen it in some of our players. They start, when they first joined, they were quite quiet and shy and reserved because of that fear of getting involved in sport, but now that you can't shut some of them up.
Right. Wonderful. So
yeah.
So you're enabling people to develop skills on the pitch, and that is providing a confidence boost by the sounds.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Grand. Now tell me about some of the highlights then of the first season. I mean, playing against other teams, training together, developing skills, developing confidence. So it's not simply about going and playing another team and whether you win or lose. Clearly loads of highlights, but
yeah,
tell me some of the things that have really stood out for you.
We sort of been sort of traveling sort of the country, really, sort of all of our fixtures so far have been sort of development matches, just because we sort of wanted people to sort of learn rugby, essentially. So we've sort of been visiting other IGR teams. So our first match was in October against the Manchester Village Spartans, who sort of Dean B sort of helped set us up. So we sort of played against them. They've all been sort of like development matches.
Yes.
Sort of February, we sort of played against our sort of sister club that was set up at the same time, the Chester Centurions. So we played against them, which was sort of a really good experience for all of us, because we'd all sort of basically novices to rugby. And then we went down to Swansea. So play against the Swansea Vikings, which was an amazing experience. We have sort of travelled the country quite a lot. So for this upcoming season, we've got sort of, I think, the 1st September on our way to Newcastle to play against the Newcastle Ravens. And sort of the whole IGR community is just, it's a lot bigger than you probably think. So I know the Caledonian Thebans up in Edinburgh, they run like a rugby clinic in October, so we should be going to that.
There's about 75 teams across the world,
right,
15 of which are around here, but we spread across five continents, which is not something you always expect from rugby. It's a very quintessentially like Australian and
yes,
British sport,
yes,
but it's spread across South America, North America, and it's really fantastic, like you say, the community element of it, because we all want to get more people involved in rugby. We're all really good friends, we all support each other's teams. There's not that kind of rivalry between anywhere, and I think that's reflected within the club as well. Like, we all get on so well. For me, that's the highlight of this year, that we all get on as a group so well. Like, we've known each other for less than a year, and yet we've got people who are super good friends. We're talking daily, like going on trips across the country with each other, just as a social group. And that's really, really nice, because, like I say, as LGBT people, we can sometimes feel disconnected from other people, but this is a community that we know is safe and that we have a shared interest as well.
Yes.
So for me, that's one of the highlights. But also, our very big win against Chester was also one of mine as well.
Yeah, no, I think it was good. I mean, we had been had a bit more, like, a month's experience on them, but I think it was sort of really important, sort of seeing how far, like, our skill had come. We did lose the two other fixtures, but they were sort of against experienced teams. All the sort of IGR clubs across the world get together for the Mark Kendall Memorial Tournament, otherwise known as the Bingham Cup. So this year it was in Amsterdam. So basically, it's essentially sort of the Gay Rugby World Cup. So we all sort of come together from all over the world.
About 3,000 rugby players hit Amsterdam in June.
I don't
think Amsterdam knew what hit it, quite frankly. But
so we didn't go to this year because we didn't feel ready. But we'll definitely sort of go in next year. I think the bids are being put in for sort of either Argentina, sort of in Mendoza, or Ottawa in Canada.
Yeah.
So, like, definitely is it sort of
the opportunity to go to Canada to play rugby against teams from across the world would
just
be
amazing,
fantastic. And like I say, some people will be doing that after only playing rugby for maybe a year.
So this is absolutely fantastic. You've got a great opportunity to travel, to meet other folk from all over the world.
Yeah.
Great community here. 75 teams across five continents.
Yeah.
15 teams in the Great Britain or the UK. Superb. So you must be looking forward to the season ahead. And I know that it's your first anniversary.
Yeah.
So relatively young team, but you've already secured some really interesting business partnerships and sponsorships with some businesses here in Sheffield. So we'd love to support you, we'd love to sponsor you. They can see the business benefits to them in doing so, and of course that presumably enables the team to do things that it couldn't otherwise do. So can you perhaps tell me a little bit about who's working with you in terms of businesses and how you've gone out and secured sponsorship?
We'll give that to Felix, he's our fundraising officer.
Yes, we've had a really good response so far in terms of people that are willing to sponsor us and the different type of companies that want to sponsor us. So, for example, we've got the Gay Quarter already, we've got South Yorkshire RFU, we've got Heather Isabel Photography, Supertram have recently sponsored us as well, Uniplex. We're also in talks with Treehouse Board Game Cafe in Sheffield and Mulberry Tavern Bar. But it's been really interesting seeing the support that they want to give, and the sponsorship that they give us is vital in terms of the club's development, in terms of getting new training kit, buying new balls, equipment, that sort of thing, like being able to fund trips to other clubs, for example, because sometimes when we're travelling, some people are a bit unsure of the costs in terms of what they can afford. And if the club can put some money towards that as a result of sponsorship that they've gained, it makes the club kind of develop at a much faster rate, I think. So it's really good in terms of the reception we've received. And we kind of just went about, when I took over the role, of just going out there and seeing what's on offer, essentially. With Supertram, I approached one of them, one of the employees, and asked if this was something that they are interested in doing. And they're really kind of receptive, I guess, and really keen to sponsor the first IGR team in Sheffield.
Great, superb. So you're making it sound as though you simply got in contact with them and they've said yes, and that's absolutely great. But it isn't easy for any organisation to secure sponsorship. There has to be an alignment in terms of it's got to not only be something where people believe in who they're working with, but there's a business benefit. So how have you presented the business benefit to sponsors? Any tips for anyone else, if they're running a social enterprise, if they're running a club or a society and they want to work with businesses, and also anything that you'd like to flag up to people running businesses listening who think, well, I like the sound of the team here and we'd like to get involved and support them as well. What's a business benefit, would you say?
Yeah, so I think in terms of how we approach businesses, kind of putting the question to them whether they'd be willing to sponsor us, is kind of we show them our values essentially and what we're all about inclusive rugby and creating a safe place for LGBTQ plus people in Sheffield. And it's really important that that place is provided, because until now, you do have the occasional things, but we see this as being a foundation and can really go on in the future. So we kind of just presented our values to the businesses that we went forward to approach and stuff like that. Many times it's just been kind of we're just in the place at the right time and talking to the right people, or asked to be put in contact with the person who makes those decisions about sponsorship. And any tips for people going out, I'd say just persevere, really. If you present reasons to why you think you should be sponsored and the kind of adequate reasons, and people can see the value in becoming a partner with you, I think it will work for them and stuff like that. And in terms of other businesses, if they are willing or quite fancy having a chat with us about sponsorship, there's still loads of kind of ideas that we've got in terms of sponsorship. The best thing to do would be probably email me at fundraising@sheffieldvulcans.com. I'm onto that email all the time and will aim to get back to you straight away. So yeah,
brilliant, thank you Felix, superb. So outside of playing rugby and running the club and bit, you talked about the committee as well and activities between matches, of course there's training, you have a coach that you mentioned, Andrea. What do the three of you do when you're not playing rugby? And and I'll ask you to mention this briefly, because I want to go on to a couple more questions about the Vulcans. But what else is going on?
I'm a learning and development manager for an office supplies company, so I look after all of the training and all of the development of skills in sales, marketing and product knowledge. But I also run my own theatre company here in Sheffield as well. So Buttside Up has been going for 2 years this September.
Right.
So very similar vein of setting something up from the ground up to get creative people, young people involved in the community.
We've come to a few of your plays, haven't we?
Yeah, Vulcans are very supportive.
Excellent.
I think it was like 2 months in, they all came to see my play that I wrote, Batman, a spoof musical.
Right.
So that was really nice to find a group of people that were really supportive of what I did outside of rugby as well.
Yes. And is there a website for your theatre?
ButtersideUpTheatre.com.
Right, great. So we'll check that out and I'll tweet the link to that.
Cheeky plug.
Excellent.
So, we sort of go to sort of quite a few, sort of have a few, quite a few socials. Sort of training definitely is quite a sort of important. So Andrew Dobson, our coach, is one of the RFU development officers for Yorkshire. So she's been absolutely amazing in terms of sort of training and stuff. So training is sort of not quite sort of like this high pressured sort of environment. It's just sort of very sort of social and sort of focusing on sort of building our skills sort of as a team, really, because it's not sort of like a everyone takes glory in sort of their part. Everyone sort of has a different role to play. So that's good. So we sort of, when did we go? We went, was it last Saturday, wasn't it? We went to a, because it's sort of the contact rugby season sort of ended. So it's sort of in summer, he says, as it's raining. Is sort of like touch rugby season.
Yeah.
So we went to a touch rugby tournament that was hosted by one of the other RGI teams, the Birmingham Bulls.
Right.
So this was like our first like proper tournament. We were like really excited for it. So obviously because it was touch, it was a little bit less formal. So we got to meet all the other IGR teams. So it was called Touch My Brum, which I thought was quite a clever pun.
Yep. Always get a pun in if you can. That's my
marketing 101.
So we came joint third, actually. It was in the lower tiers, but it was like a really good experience because we've had quite a few sort of new players join. So this was like their first experience in actually having sort of like a fixture or sort of playing several games. Absolutely exhausting by the end of the day. We're all sort of sweating.
Yeah.
And
it was great though because some people have only been part of the team for maybe 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah,
and they represented us in a tournament, even right back to our first game of the season against Manchester. They'd been a team for well over a year, that team that we played, and we'd been together 8 weeks.
Yes.
And yet we only lost 29-5, which I'm still super happy about.
Yeah,
a team who'd been going a lot longer, and after only 8 weeks, like I say, with so many new players.
And we scored some points. He scored points.
Yes.
Yeah.
One try.
Well, that's great.
But it's better than no tries, and that's the thing. And we held them off from scoring quite a bit as well. So,
yeah, so I think we were
right throughout the season, we've had new members like trickling all the way through.
Yeah.
But then over the next couple of weeks, we've got Pride, we've got our welcome week, where we want to really open it up and get a big chunk of new members all in at once, really grow our ranks, and then with that we'll be going right back to the basics and teaching everyone Rugby 101 and developing everyone at the same level so that by the start of the season in September, October time, we're ready and we've got a good like bulky team.
Right, brilliant.
To play next season with.
So welcoming season to get people involved, welcome them. And I want to come back to that in a moment. I'm just going to give Felix also the chance to say what you do when you're not involved in securing sponsorship and playing rugby.
Yeah, so I'm a business development manager for a kind of small startup company that we've built this online platform for businesses to recommend one another. So it's all about increasing your recommendations and kind of building your profile as a business, that sort of thing. So
great, super. So with what you're doing when you're not involved in Vulcans, for all three of you, the transferable skills here have clearly helped the Vulcans as well.
Yeah.
So absolutely great. Now, time flies when you're having fun. We've only got a couple of minutes left, unfortunately, but you've mentioned Sheffield Pride tomorrow, and you've mentioned Welcome Week as well.
So two training sessions for that. We're doing it on Tuesday and Thursday, which is sort of definitely like sort of like a compressed sort of basic, we'll sort of get to know us, and then we're running a social on the Saturday, which is sort of just get to know the team and sort of definitely sort of a less informal manner. So we think that'll be sort of good welcome for newer players.
We're going to be at Pride tomorrow from noon as part of the march, right the way up through the evening, and then we're inevitably going out as well, so
definitely.
You can probably see us celebrating Pride at night time as well, but we welcome anyone to come down to our stall at Pride, have a chat with us, Maybe throw a bit of a ball around. We've got flyers that they can take away. We can get people signed up there and then. And you can just ask any questions about IGR, about Vulcans, or inclusive rugby in general.
Our first four sessions, like when you join up, especially if you don't know if it's going to be for you, our first four sessions are free. And then we'll sort of get you to sign up. But obviously by the fourth session, hopefully, like really, really enjoy it.
Yes.
And sort of get a sort of feeling for what the team's about.
Brilliant. That's great. And so can you give out the website as well? So
yeah, it's SheffieldVulcans.com.
Yeah.
And then you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Chef Vulcans.
Yeah.
And then we're on Facebook as well. So I'm constantly on my phone. So if you message us on any of the three social media things, you'll probably get a response from me within a couple of minutes.
Right. So, Michael, you're looking after social media channels.
Yeah, I'm the PR and comms person because I come from a PR and marketing background. So it just kind of made sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Superb. Grand. So it's a case of tomorrow, get down to Pride, meet you. Will you be wearing kit?
Yes, we'll all be in the Vulcans kit.
Yeah, so you'll all be in Vulcans kit, so easy to find you. Have a chat or take a look at the website, get involved, come along to training sessions. First four are free as well.
Yep.
Superb. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
All the best as well for the next season. Really exciting. Ashley Martin, Michael Hudson, Felix Barr, talking about the Sheffield Vulcans Rugby Club. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And we are going to play a track of music which has been chosen by Michael at the Sheffield Vulcans, our first guest today. And we'll play that in just a moment. But do take a look at the website and check out Sheffield Vulcans. Meet them if you can. Tomorrow at Pride, this track is Lady Gaga, Born This Way.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And in the studio this morning, we've heard from Ashley Martin, Michael Hudson and Felix Barr of the Sheffield Vulcans Rugby Club, the inclusive rugby club. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed the interview with Ashley, Michael and Felix, then don't panic. You can catch it on the podcast later on the Sheffield Live website. Go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and the show will be there. Now, I'm really pleased to welcome back to the studio Jay Biani, and Jay is going to talk with us about updates to employment law that you need to know about if you're running a business or social enterprise. Jay, hello.
Hi, Jamie.
Thanks for coming in again. How are you?
I'm very good. Yes, very hot.
It's incredible, yeah. Isn't it? It's very warm. So, yes, it's about that time of year when you give employers guidance on whether it's too hot to work. And we've talked about that in the show before in updates that you've given us.
We have, and I think there's a lot in the news about this magic 30 degrees. And yes. I know my team were saying yesterday, Jay, it's 29 degrees in here. We've got a degree to go before you let us go home.
Yes, yeah, indeed. So quite a lot has been going on since you gave us the last update on the show. So perhaps you could flag up a few things that you've identified which are particularly important for employers to be aware of, and policy announcements and case law and so on. What's big in employment law?
Well, I suppose we've had a little bit of a rest from the GDPR,
yeah.
which had taken over most people's lives. So I think all I'd say on that is that people put an awful lot of work into the deadline of the 25th of May. But the ICOs always said it wasn't a race finishing on the 25th of May. It was a journey. And, you know, people have got to be aware that their GDPR obligations are ongoing. And in fact, you know, as the ICO find their feet and start enforcing some of these regulations, that's when it's going to get quite scary. So for those businesses that aren't on top of it or still feel that, you know, they've not completed their data audits and put in place their privacy notices, privacy standards, sorted out their marketing campaigns, you know, they need to make sure that they do that.
Yes. Okay. So it's kind of just because the 25th of May has been and gone, that doesn't mean it's over. It very much has only just begun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Great. That's well worth bearing in mind. Good. Okay. Yeah.
So, other big news, the Parliament, I think, is about to close, and so there's a flurry of activity, and the Women and Equalities Committee have just issued their report on sexual harassment. So, as you know, I've been quite active talking about sexual harassment for quite a long time. I think it's one of my sort of pet subjects, and certainly within the law, in the legal profession, it is a real problem. So there's lots of work going on in different sectors dealing with it. But sadly, what this report says, the quote I liked from there was, throughout the world of work, in spite of the law, sexual harassment is an everyday common occurrence. And I think that's really shocking, you know, particularly with the Me Too campaign and as much there's a lot more transparency around sexual harassment issues. So what this report has done is come up with a few recommendations, and then we'll see whether there's any legislation change as a result of it. So shall I just tell you,
yes,
about
run
some of
through
them?
Some of those?
Yeah, so what they're recommending is, first of all, that we put sexual harassment at the top of the agenda. And at the moment, we have a system whereby employers know that if an employee is a victim of sexual harassment, they can make a complaint through informally or through their grievance procedure, and the employer has a duty to tackle it. But actually, that's tackling it the wrong way around, because we're being very reactive, aren't we, to somebody making a complaint. And what they want to do is turn it on its head and make sure that employers are much more proactive.
Proactive, yeah.
By having more awareness, training. I've been working on some toolkits, simple practical things that employers can put into place to make sure that, you know, it is top of the agenda. So that's, you know, the first thing that they've recommended. The other thing is to have regulators with more teeth to be able to have a more active role. So various businesses will have different regulators. So for myself as a law firm, you know, we've got the Solicitors Regulation Authority, who already have quite a lot of power to start looking at whether you should be able to practice as a solicitor if your firm is found you know, to have a problem with sexual harassment or other discrimination. So other regulators as well getting involved, maybe even the Health and Safety Executive.
Yes.
Because, you know, it is an issue of failing to protect an employee's, you know, safety,
yes,
which is a duty on employers.
Yes, indeed it is. Okay.
Making enforcement stricter is one of them. And, you know, collecting data on identifying whether there is a problem. But I think one of the more interesting ones is, you know, they're trying to insist that we don't use gagging clauses and non-disclosure agreements.
Right.
So there are lots of...
And those have actually been widely used, haven't they?
Yeah, very much so. And we've heard of, you know, politicians. So what happens is that typically a woman will make a complaint of sexual harassment. That might be found to be well-founded, and then... the employer will pay the woman some compensation and either see her on her way or she remains within the workplace. But there's almost always a gagging clause,
right,
within a settlement agreement usually, or a non-disclosure agreement. And what that does is it means that we're dealing with that problem, but not dealing with the, you know, the symptom of the problem.
No.
and the bigger picture. So I think there's a real move towards trying to get rid of non-disclosure agreements.
Right. Okay. Indeed. So, and the report, and the more recommendations within the report as well.
Yeah. These are just the ones that I've picked out.
Yes.
But yeah, watch this space.
Yeah.
When Parliament resumes, we'll see what.
And that's the Women and Equalities Committee.
Yeah.
And of course, one could quite. Rightly say that Parliament does need to put its own house in order as well,
yes.
Clearly, and we've heard some horrific examples lately of parliamentarians' behaviour too. So yes, the report is published online. Like all committee reports, people can take a look at that and find that and read it as well.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And talking about MPs, if I can then just mention about MPs and proxy votes. I don't know if you've heard about this one, Jamie.
I have, but I thought it was really interesting. But can you elaborate?
So I've become a bit of a media mogul at the moment because in the space of 2 weeks, I was on Look North commenting on this proxy voting for MPs. And that was all about a Labour MP who was on maternity leave.
Yep.
And they have this very antiquated rule whereby they don't have a proxy vote. So if you are not physically able to vote on an important piece of policy, then you have to do a deal with somebody from the opposing party to give up their vote.
Yes.
And so this MP thought she'd done that, came to an agreement with a Conservative MP, who, surprise, surprise, exercised his vote and said he'd forgotten that they'd agreed
and, <yes. laughs>
his deal. So obviously, you know, it's a massive letdown to the MP who was on maternity leave.
She was incandescent, wasn't she? Because this was a reneging on an agreement.
Yes.
And the MP concerned, who said he'd forgotten, had not voted on a couple of earlier votes in the day.
Yes.
Kind of in line with the proxy agreement, but then he had voted on a vote which was a pretty crucial one for the government, whereas if they'd lost the vote, it would have been it would have been fairly disastrous. And then it's a case of we hear announcements on whether the chief whip pressured the MP into doing it and so on, but the system, as you said, you use the word antiquated, and it seems to rely on handshakes and so on, and people then not following through on this. So, and it's meant to enable people to not be dragged into the House of Commons when they're on maternity leave,
or when an MP is at sick leave
or at death's door or whatever. And so if it works, one could say it perhaps is a good system, but it doesn't sound like it's working to me.
No. And I mean, you know, it should be fairly simple. As long as you've got proper security measures, why would you not put in place a proxy vote? You know, and I think there are lots of things, as I'm getting to know a little bit more about MPs and how they work, because I have been trying to help with a challenge with regard to disability discrimination. You know, it is a system whereby they just shut you down and they say, well, MPs don't have any employment status in the sense that they're not employed, so the Equalities Act doesn't apply to us. Well, you know, it really should apply to them.
Yeah.
And if these people are making our laws, they should also be protected by them.
Yes.
And they should understand, you know, what their rights and obligations are so that they are better able to protect the rest of us.
Yes, most definitely. So, yeah, interesting times there.
Yeah.
Great. And there's more.
Yes, there's more. So older workers.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a report about over a million older workers being discriminated against, and, you know, a question mark over whether the normal retirement age, which was removed some years ago, should be imposed again, or, you know, how you deal with the problem of older people not being able to secure work, I think was the focus of this report, rather than discrimination within employment, which is slightly easier to tackle. So that's quite interesting, because, you know, age discrimination is one of the hardest areas of discrimination in some ways. Because if you're a woman and you're saying that you're discriminated against on the grounds of your gender, you have a direct comparator, which is a man doing the same job or applying for the same job. If you're disabled, your comparator is a non-disabled person. When you're talking about age, you know, who's your comparator? Someone who's 10 years older than you, 2 years older than you, 2 years younger than you? You know, there's no set comparator. So I think it's a really, really interesting area, and one that's probably one of the hardest to establish and draw inference from the way that a person is treated, whether there is age discrimination.
Yes, indeed. It sounds like it. Very difficult to make those comparisons, and see meaningfully whether discrimination is taking place.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's an interesting one. And then a couple of others that I've picked out. So caste discrimination. A lot of people, I think, don't know that there are religions and cultures within which there are lots of different castes. Mm. And they're sort of, you know, sub-races almost in themselves. And there's been a push to include protection as a protected characteristic on the grounds of your caste. But that's been rejected, and the government has now categorically said that they don't need to protect those of a particular caste in its own right, and that actually most of that is covered within the current Equality Act.
Have they? Right.
Yeah. Which I sort of agree with. I think, you know, you've got to be careful about how many protected characteristics you can add. And I think that there is protection for caste discrimination. So I think I agree with that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you noticing that people are coming to you with specific inquiries about one particular issue more than anything else at the moment? I mean, we've talked in the past how last year, when Me Too became prominent and the worldwide attention started being given to Me Too, more and more employers were saying to you, could you run training appropriate to discrimination? Are you getting more inquiries pertaining to a specific subject at the moment?
Yeah, I think training is really important, because it helps you to protect the business as well as empower people to deal with issues. But I think day to day in my employment law firm, top of the agenda at the moment seems to be litigated claims, so tribunal claims.
Right.
Because when the tribunal fees were removed not long ago, the claims have gone up by 90%.
Right.
So that's really scary for employers to have to deal with. So generally we've become busier. But in terms of particular topics, mental health, depression, so people being off with depression, very, very much a problem with younger employees.
Yeah.
And what do we do with them? You know, do we have to, can we dismiss them? Can we do anything to facilitate their return, to make adjustments? And that's really becoming quite a disruptive element for smaller businesses in particular.
Right, I see. Yeah. Okay. Now, folk who want to get in touch with you and who want to pick your brains, because there are plenty of articles on your website that give people free advice. You are continually tweeting as well. And, of course, people might want to use your services on a retained basis, or your HR package, to ensure they're doing everything they need to. How do they get in touch? Do you want to give the website address?
Yes, Jamie. It's www.byarneylaw.co.uk. And we have an email, a subscription for our newsletter, which is free. And we're always putting loads of interesting blogs about employment law and HR issues.
Super. So. Well, that's been really fascinating, Jay. Jay Byarney, thank you very much for joining us today. We could go on, but time flies when you're having fun. And I always have fun when I discuss employment law with you, Jay, because you are so knowledgeable about it. So thank you very much for coming in, and do get in touch with Jay via her website. Sign up to her free emails if you'd like to know more. So Jay Byarney, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.
And this is Business Live, our weekly business social enterprise program, with me, Jamie Veitch. Jay Byarney has just been with us, and thank you, Jay. Again, if you've missed that, there was some really crucial advice there for you, so catch the podcast later. We're going to play a quick track of music. We're going to play a bit of Sister Sledge. We are family.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme, and I would love to hear from you if you are doing something interesting, innovative, exciting, unusual, and you'd like to be on the programme. Well, drop me a line, send me a text, phone me up, 07904 272 200. Jamie@sheffieldlive.org, Jamie Veitch on Twitter, Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Loads of business leaders and social enterprise founders and leaders end up on the show because they've contacted us. So that could be you. Get in touch if you'd like to be on the programme. And I am delighted to welcome, for a return visit to the show, Tom Sutton of the Sheffield Chamber. Tom, hello.
Hello, Jamie. Pleasure to be back.
Thank you for coming back. So I invited you back because there are a number of really exciting events that the Chamber is involved with that I thought you could let listeners know about. So over to you, Tom. What is coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So we get to that point in the year where it does enter the big event season.
Yeah.
So the first one off that I'd like to highlight is the 20th of September.
Yep.
That's a Thursday. And that's the President's Annual Dinner at the Cutler's Hall. We then move swiftly on to the 24th of October, where it's Showcase Sheffield. That's our business exhibition and conference event.
Yeah.
And then we then move to the 29th of November, which is the flagship event in the annual calendar, and that is the Sheffield Business Awards.
Grand. Okay, so three really key events there. Flagship events, all of them, the flagship business awards, of course, President's Dinner, and the exhibition and conference. And that, so let's go from the top there. September, President's Dinner. Tickets available?
Yeah, absolutely. Tickets available now. Yeah.
Great. Super. Highlights for you, do you think, for the President's Dinner? What's going to be the most exciting part of it?
Well, it's always that unique event where we give the President the opportunity to celebrate or honour something that's special to them and really looks back at their year in office and what they've contributed to the Chamber, which obviously is a voluntary role, is absolutely huge. So John Hayward this year, he's Chief Executive Officer of Pressure Technologies, has a military background, so no surprise there that the theme is all looking at military service personnel and recognising their contribution to the business community.
Right, so he will be flagging his highlights and he'll be talking about the contribution of military ex-services folk to businesses.
He will do, and we have a great lineup of speakers there, so we'll be joined by Dan Jarvis, MP, newly elected Mayor of the Sheffield City Region.
Yes, that's going to be interesting.
Absolutely, so we're pleased to be hosting Dan at that dinner and that event. And then we'll be joined as well by Colonel Andy Hadfield, who has a extensive career within the military, quite impressive. So we're going to hear from Andy about his insights into military and business workings.
Right, grand. So that's President's Dinner.
That's
in
President's
September.
Dinner. Yes.
Brilliant. Then in October, we have the Showcase Sheffield event, as you mentioned. Showcase Sheffield, is that? Yeah.
Showcase Sheffield, that's the one.
Good. Pondsforge.
Pondsforge, yeah.
So this is an iteration, a development, an evolution of what was last year, the Connect Sheffield event, which I went along to and enjoyed. So tell me what's happening this year with Showcase Sheffield.
It is. So, again, like everything, you rightly said, Connect Sheffield, first year we did a business exhibition conference on that scale. We've evolved it this year into Showcase Sheffield.
Yeah.
So what we'll be having, again, exhibitors provide Sheffield businesses the opportunity to showcase their products and their services to other business people within the city, within the region. And again, looking at that conference element, we've tailored that slightly this year. So we're following our mission statement, which is support, grow and connect. And we've got various themes which tail off of those.
Right. Grand. Okay. Super. Sounds good. And of course, details on the website. And then let's come on to the awards. 29th of November, you said, I think, for the awards event.
That is correct. Yeah, that's the awards event. So the evening itself on Thursday, the 29th of November.
But the awards are open for entries.
They are open for entries, and they are open for entries right now with the deadline closing on the 3rd of September.
Yeah. So, time flies when you're having fun, as I keep saying, but time will fly in terms of the deadline might seem quite a long way off, but get working on your entries now so you can put in a really, really good entry. You had a record number of entries last year, I believe.
Yeah, we did. We went from 101 to 150 applications last year, from obviously currently where we're looking and tracking on the system, we're predicting that number again will be broken this year.
Right, okay, so it's well worth putting a really good application in, because the business awards, simply to be shortlisted to be a finalist, is a huge achievement in itself, and it's recognition from your peers in the business community.
Absolutely, never like to detract away from, like you say, even getting shortlisted is such an achievement, and it's one to be proud of.
Yeah,
Grand. Okay, super. Now, we are about 1 minute away from wrapping up the show, so I'm going to have to close it there. But I would flag also there are training events or workshops or other things on the Sheffield Chamber website that you offer to members and non-members.
Absolutely.
And it's worth taking a look at the site. Do you want to give out the site address, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. I would encourage people to visit the Chamber website, which is www.scci.org.uk, and you can find absolutely everything that we're up to on that website. Any questions, contact details are at the bottom of that page. I'd encourage you to contact myself or one of the team.
Brilliant. So people can get in touch with you, and I'm sure they will. Tom Sutton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Jamie, pleasure. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Back on air next Friday, Heidi Fisher, social enterprise author, it will be joining us. Don't go away now. Next up, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk from 10 through to 12. And it's Sheffield Pride this weekend. If you go along, you can meet the Sheffield Vulcans, our guests from earlier on today on the show. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Tom, our last guest. Thanks, Jay, our earlier guest. Thanks, Ashley, Michael and Felix, our first guest. Thank you to listening. Thank you, Sangeeta, our sound engineer. Thank you, Farah, coming in for working experience today. What a great show. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Hope you have too. We're going to play out with 30 seconds of Donna Summer Hot Stuff.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.